Welcome everyone to The Enthusiast Life. I am your host, Mark Turcotte. I'm so glad each and every one of you have decided to make me a part of your day. Well, it is Wednesday, July 22nd, 2020, and if I'm sounding a little bit different today, it's probably because I'm recording this first thing in the morning on Wednesday, and so I got my coffee next to me, gotta, you know, stretch the pipes and all that here. So it's been a while since I recorded a show in the morning like this. And I kind of enjoy this, like getting up and I was kind of, as I'm pouring my coffee, thinking about what I wanted to talk about today and, you know, just thinking about all the Xbox 360 games that I used to love. So we're going to talk about those here in a little bit. And of course, talk about the ones that you guys sent me as well over on Twitter. Big thanks to everyone who responded to that. But tomorrow we're going to do the same thing, just this time with the Xbox One. So just like before, either email me, theenthuselife@gmail.com, or look for that thread over on Twitter, at Mark Turk, M-A-R-K-T-U-R-C, where I ask, what are some of your favorite Xbox One games? And remember, these games don't need to be exclusive first-party games. It's just what games do you equate to that system? So we're going to talk about the 360 in a little bit. But first, couple quick news stories I did want to get out there. And this one I find kind of interesting. And this, you know, for some people, if you're not into sports games, this may not be up your alley. But NHL 21 is coming out in October, which, by the way, it's been kind of just infoless up to this point. I mean, we've had things about Madden. We've had things about, you know, NBA 2K. But just, which of course, different companies, but getting nothing on NHL 21. I think they had announced it earlier kind of in the summer. And that was it. And usually by this point, I mean, NHL has had betas multiple times over the summer where they're kind of just saying, hey, you know, we want you to play the game. We want to make sure that our players enjoy the way it feels. And, you know, let's be honest. The NHL series is not the flagship sports game for EA Sports, you know, partly just because of where the NHL stands as a sport, you know, popularity-wise in the States. But it still sells very well. You know, when I think back to some of my favorite sports games of all time, NHL 94 is up there, so I always check in on the series every year, usually getting into the beta. I really haven't dedicated myself to an NHL game in a long time, but we did get word that it is coming out this October. However, there will be no next-gen versions of this game. That's kind of interesting. I mean, pretty much every year or every console launch, you always still have that Madden that comes out. You have those sports games that hit the console because those are just easy sellers. They know, like, well, no matter what, we can put new IPs out there. Those usually don't sell as well unless they're like a launch title and people are just looking for titles to play. You know, of course, obviously games like Assassin's Creed, all these games are going to be cross-gen that are names that people know are going to sell like crazy. And these are one of those games, usually sports games that they can throw out there. I mean, I remember buying my Xbox 360. When I bought it, I bought Call of Duty, Call of Duty 2, it would have been, I think was the first one before World at War, which was 3, and I bought Madden. And the problem, though, with those sports games is they're just not that good. It just seems like they can never, I don't know if it's because they're running out of new engine, new technology. They usually aren't feature complete, so it usually takes like a year or two before you get like your franchise modes and all that in those, but they still sell well. But this time, EA is kind of stepping back and saying, you know what? We're not going to do that this time. We don't want to put a non-feature complete game out. And here's what they had to say in the statement that they put out. They said, we've had to make major adjustments in developing the game from home. This transition has been very successful, and we're happy to say that the game is on track and feature complete against our original vision. We just need a few extra weeks to do the polish, fine-tuning, and bug fixing. They said, for NHL 21, we made the decision to focus on adding innovation and new features rather than the resource-heavy task of porting the game to new console technology. We're fully focused on launching NHL 21 on the Xbox One and PS4 and look forward to the opportunities the next gen systems will bring in the future. So really, I think, you know, if you were somebody who was buying a new console and you were looking for that next upgraded version of this series, I could see a little bit of disappointment. But in the end, with the track record, like I said, of these sports games coming out on these platforms and not being up to the par that people want, especially, you know, if you think that there potentially could have been two versions of this, one for current gen that would play great, and then you spend $500 on your new console and you get a version of the game that is just not that great. This is a win-win, I think, for everyone. So we'll see. You know, I think it's something that is smart And I'm almost surprised a lot of other developers haven't done this. I mean, in the end, of course, if you can put it on both, why not, right? Because you're expanding your potential consumer base. And so you can just make more money in that case. But in the same sense, you know, why put out a buggy game that just isn't going to be up to the par? And then in the end, you get flack back for it of people upset and then, you know, potentially having to do refunds, which we know doesn't happen that often, but then it just forces you to do more work to maybe make right with the fans. I don't know. I think this is actually a really, really smart thing for them to do that. And I'm surprised we haven't seen more developers do something similar to this for sure. We also got some news that Rocket League is going free to play, which I gotta be honest, I was kind of surprised it wasn't already. I don't even know how we've gone this long with Rocket League not being free to play. I mean, it is, what, a budget title. I think it was only $20. Kind of here, just if you bought the base version of Rocket League. But many people were exposed to Rocket League back when it was free with PlayStation Plus. I mean, how many years ago now? 4 or 5 years ago when that came out. And I mean, you think about when that game launched, it was middle of the summer, I think. It was probably July. This is probably somewhat of an anniversary for them. And I mean, that game just exploded. And, you know, I mean, that was such a smart way to release that game. Because on paper, you look at Rocket League, or hell, even if you didn't look at it on paper, read what it was, or just saw a video of it, you'd be like, what the hell is this game? Like, I'm not going to buy this game where I'm driving this car hitting a soccer ball. It just seemed so out of place. But when you were able to jump in for free, I mean, it just, so many people were hooked by it. The gameplay is so much fun, so frenetic. It's just a great game to play. I remember playing with my son, and I hear a lot that people's, like children, this is kind of their first game now. Like, a lot of people try to kind of expose their kids, obviously, to Mario and platformers and things like that. But when it comes to some driving games and potentially sports games, this seems to be kind of that game that a lot of people gravitate to, because there's nothing in the game that's bad. You know, there's no violence in the game. It's fun to drive a car. It's flashy. You're unlocking things. Everything is colorful. It's just a fun, fun game. And so I know a lot of folks, like I said, have been kind of exposing their kids early on to this game. And there's even, you know, like the rookie mode where you could play against the AI and the other cars just really aren't that good. So anybody can score and have fun with it. And it's pretty much on every platform now. So it's on Switch, it's on PS4, it's on Xbox One, it's on everything. This is just brilliant, I think, for Psyonix to do it. And I mean, the funny thing is, this game is actually a very, very large esport. So I could see a lot of these younger kids getting in for free and then just rising up the ranks and it becoming an even bigger esport now that anybody who wants to jump into Rocket League can do that. Now, coming with this, it is leaving Steam, although if you still own it on Steam, I guess all your purchases and the game will still be able to be played through there. However, the free version will be over on the Epic Game Store, because if you remember, Psyonix was actually purchased by Epic last year. So a little bit of a shift there, but I think, you know, in the end, it's still going to be just as successful as it has been. And I'm interested, really, to see kind of where this game goes from here. And finally here, before we talk about the Xbox 360, because there's a lot to talk about there. That's why I'm just going to put a couple little news stories here in the beginning. But we did get word that Avatar The Legend of Korra is coming to Netflix. I know this is, you know, somewhat divisive amongst the Avatar community. Some people enjoyed Korra, some didn't. My daughter and I are currently making our way through Avatar The Last Airbender. So for me, I was kind of like, no, this is cool. This is going to be there, which it already is actually on, I think, Prime and even CBS All Access. So there are other ways to watch this. But I think putting it on Netflix is smart. It's coming August 14th. I think the fact that Avatar is there, it's going to get that many more people in. Because remember, Netflix is making a live action version of Avatar. And they actually have the original co-creators, Michael Dante DiMartino and Brian Koenigsegg. Probably said that name terribly, but both of them are on board for the live action series, which of course we have no release date or anything yet, but it was announced back in 2018. So it is coming, which it's funny, man. I mean, they're putting Avatar on there. We got One Piece, which I don't think we ever talked about here in the Enthusiast Life. One Piece is currently on Netflix, like the first, I think it's the first three or four major arcs. It gets you like 150 episodes. Go watch that if you haven't. They are even having their live action series for One Piece is coming to Netflix. So it's like Netflix kind of buying up the rights to make live action versions of these series and then putting them on Netflix. You know, you think about it, I just kind of thinking pie in the sky here. You guys know I'm a big Dragon Ball fan. What if they somehow secured the rights for that to make a true good live action Dragon Ball series? It would be amazing on Netflix. I don't see it happening, and in my head I've always thought Dragon Ball is kind of like the Lord of the Rings of books, where people always said that film could never be made. Well, Peter Jackson did it. In my head, I think Dragon Ball is the unlive actionable, if that's even a word, series, that there's just no way that it could possibly happen. That you can't make that into a live action series. And who knows? Maybe they'll prove me wrong and be able to do that. So we'll have to wait and see. But I don't think Dragon Ball will ever be making the jump, because you think about a Funimation, they have their own service that they stream, but One Piece is there, not all of it, but they also have that on their Funimation platform as well. So I don't know. Maybe that's my hopes and dreams just kind of coming out there. All right, let's move on here to the Xbox 360. Tomorrow is, of course, the very big Xbox showcase. They're going to be showing not only Halo Infinite, but a bunch of the Xbox Series X games. So people are very, very excited. So we're taking this week to kind of look back at the previous Xbox consoles and talk about just, you know, the console itself and some of the best games. And so, of course, I asked you guys about that. But before we get to that, I want to just tell you guys a little bit about my history with the 360. Obviously, we talked yesterday about the original Xbox, so I did have that. But the 360, I did not get at launch, just like the Xbox. Even though I was such an Xbox person, such a Halo fan, by this point, I was already living in Charlotte. And if you remember, they were pretty hard to come by. And I was still playing Halo 2 with my buddies through Xbox Live, and I was like, why would I need an Xbox 360 right now? Halo's not on it yet. I'll be fine. Well, that lasted only for, you know, a couple months, and I want to say it was maybe 2 or 3 months after the system launched that I was like, okay, I need to get one of these things. And at that point, it was tough to get. They were still hard to find. I just got lucky and happened to call a Target like the night before. It was late. It was like 8:30 or something. And I got a hold of somebody who just said, yeah, hey, we have two of those. They're on our truck in the back. We're going to be unloading them tonight. If you want one, you need to be here first thing in the morning. So I drive it, and it was a Target like on the other side of Charlotte. So I had to drive, 30, 40 minutes to even get there. I get there early in the morning, waiting in the parking lot. And then when I pull in, there's this other car there, and I could see there was this guy in there. And so the minute I pull in, he gets up and walks over to the door. So I'm like, all right. I'm like, well, I guess I need to do the same, right? So I kind of walk over there, and we're both standing there, and he just looks at me, and he goes, I know why you're here. And I just smile. I go, I know why you're here, too. We both just kind of started laughing, and we're like, oh, yeah, we'll get the Xbox. Well, don't you know, someone else shows up. It was a woman, like an older woman. And, she kind of walks over, and, everybody knew this Target only had two, and she kind of looks at us, and she's like, are you guys here for the Xbox? And we're like, yep. And she was just like, oh, and then she tries giving us a sob story. My son really needs one and wants one. And it's just like, lady, no, you came here after us. Like, we're getting these Xboxes. So she actually stayed. Doors open up, the Target folks, and all three of us are going to the back. And you could tell we were kind of briskly walking, even though me and this guy clearly were like, we have these Xboxes. Like, this lady is not getting the Xbox. But we briskly walked back there, everybody kind of going. And it ended up, I did get the one with the, what was the hard drive that you could get at that point? It was like a 20 gig hard drive or something. That was the one that I ended up buying. Just kind of this weird experience that I never really had buying a console before. But bought it, and I got Call of Duty 2 was the game, and then Madden. Those are the two games that I bought my 360 with. And Call of Duty Online was great. I just remember playing that and just was kind of completely just engulfed in the story of that game, because I just at that point loved history just kind of like I do today. So playing kind of just through all those missions and through Europe, a war-torn Europe, was awesome. Like I said earlier, the Madden was garbage. It was just terrible. The game played bad, and at that point we had been so used to like the 2K series, which I don't think that ever, I think that didn't make the jump. By that point, EA had the rights to the NFL. And so it was just like, man, this is rough, because I hadn't even been playing Madden's at that point. I'd been playing all the NFL 2K games. And so when I bought Madden, I was so used to the 2K series, and it just felt wrong. So that was me getting my Xbox 360. Now, also, this was my wife and I were living in Charlotte. We didn't have any family here, and we'd only lived here for a couple months. So, I mean, I had another friend who actually moved down here, a pharmacist as well. And so we had him, but him and I were always working. So my wife, who by this point was pregnant with my son, would just sit at home. She had nothing to do. I was working 12-hour shifts. It was just like, just this weird time kind of in our lives. Well, when I bought the 360, we downloaded the demo for Zuma by PopCap. And if you've never played that, it's the people that make Peggle, and it's an awesome game. I mean, we love it to this day. But I would go to work, and one of my buddies texted me while I was at work. They lived in New York, and he's like, "Hey, man, I think Amanda's at home playing Zuma." And she was. I had the 360 for like 2 days, and she had already got the achievement for playing Zuma for like more than 10 hours straight or something crazy like that. She was just sitting at home with nothing to do playing Zuma. So I'm like, my wife is at home playing this brand new console that I bought more than I'm playing the console, which was just kind of this crazy thing. I'm like, man, I want to be home playing it, and here I am working. And so Zuma is still to this day. I mean, we actually just recently got EA Access for a little bit, and Zuma 2, I think, was on there, and we just passed the controller back and forth playing, and of course she got stuck playing it. She loves those little puzzle games, like even Tetris. She just loves Tetris. I've talked about that here on the show. So that was kind of one of my, and really it was one of the original Xbox Live games. I know the original Xbox had a couple downloadable games. Zuma was one of those games that was like a big downloadable game, kind of like Geometry Wars. I mean, that was when we started seeing Xbox Live Arcade explode or just be a thing, right? It really wasn't a thing up until that point. So that was one of the things that just that system brought. When you look back at the 360 and just the time frame that generation lasted, I mean, it went on for seemingly ever. It got the jump on the PS3 and the Wii, which many attribute to its success getting the jump over the PlayStation 3, although the PlayStation 3, I think, really kind of hurt itself and just the way they structured the guts of that thing, and companies just had problems developing for it, that it really was a hard system to develop for based on the fact that it really wasn't related to anything. The 360, even though it wasn't a one-to-one to the PC, it was very easy to port things over. You know, Unreal Engine 3, I guess at that point, ran great. Just ran awesome on the 360. So anybody could just build a game in Unreal if you knew that, how to develop in that. And I think that was one of the faults of the PlayStation. So that's why we saw a lot of games come to the Xbox, or games that should really run better on the PlayStation 3 run better on the 360 just because of that technology. It was kind of a weird time when you think about it for these consoles. And because the generation went on so long, I mean, that's why, you know, we think about some of these games, and there's such just a long list of games when it comes to the Xbox 360. So for me, I just want to kind of do what I did yesterday. I kind of throw out some of those games, talk a little bit about them. For me, when I think about this console, and that were some of my favorite games, and obviously, you guys know I'm a Halo guy, so it's Halo 3. I mean, Halo 3 really, really just, you know, brought everything that I wanted in a Halo game, you know, with the multiplayer, introduced Forge, brought the theater in. I mean, it was just such an experience. I mean, Bungie, for as great as like Halo Reach was, and I mean, still, I mean, that's one of the games I would throw up there. Even ODST, I really enjoy the campaign of ODST. 3 really brought everything that you would want, you know, for one of those games to the game. You know, there were things we didn't even know we wanted. Do we even really want Forge? I don't know. People, yeah, maybe you wanted a map editor, because that was kind of a thing you saw in a lot of shooters on the Xbox, or kind of that time, were these map editors. But I don't think anybody thought it would be anything like what Bungie did with Halo 3. And then that just led to all the custom games and all that. It was just an amazing, amazing game. For me, though, probably, you know, outside of kind of the non-existent IPs at that point, the one new IP that launched on that platform that just blew me away and has made me a fan to this day is the Mass Effect series. You know, the original Mass Effect was an Xbox exclusive, BioWare, coming off of Knights of the Old Republic and the success there, and Jade Empire and all those games over on the Xbox. Said, okay, we'll sign a deal and make Mass Effect console exclusive to the Xbox 360. And I mean, that series introduced just a whole new universe that was just awesome. I mean, all the alien races, the story there, the gameplay of the first one is very different than the other games. It was more RPG, but I loved the first one. I remember just playing that game into the late hours, like my wife going to bed, and like I needed to go to bed, and I would go to bed, and then like my son or even my daughter, even at that point, would get up in the middle of the night, and I'd go feed him, or if, you know, and of course you're supposed to kind of go back to bed. They always say, hey, you know, when the child sleeps or the baby sleeps, you sleep. No, I go and play Mass Effect. That's what I would go do, and just absolutely loved it. And I mean, the first one was great. But let's be honest, Mass Effect 2 is just a gem of a video game. To this day, it is still one of the top games on many people's lists, and including mine. I mean, that game is just amazing. It just combines everything that you would want. The story, the gameplay, the systems built into it, everything that that game encompasses is just amazing. Of course, Mass Effect 3 wrapped it up. It's a lot like Mass Effect 2. Take or leave the ending. I know it's very divisive for a lot of people. I enjoyed that experience. You know, people always say it's about the journey, not the destination. I didn't really have a problem like many people did with Mass Effect 3. I mean, the issue a lot of people seem to have was that the ending was kind of black and white. There were basically three endings, and we were promised the whole time that this is our story. We get to make this story. And, you know, that obviously wasn't the case, because no matter where you went with your Shepard and all the decisions you made in the end, it boiled down to these three pretty much very similar, almost identical endings. And a lot of people didn't enjoy that. But hey, for me, that series is just awesome. And when I think about the Xbox, Mass Effect is definitely there for me. Another series that definitely is there for me when I think of it is BioShock. That was that same time. I mean, that was another first-person game, a story-driven first-person game, which up to that point, sure, we had Half-Life. And I want to say maybe we even had Half-Life 2, I think, by that point, which told, you know, an incredible story in first-person as a shooter. So, you know, of course we had games like the Elder Scrolls games playing first person as in a role-playing game that told amazing stories, but to have a shooter tell a story, BioShock just took it to that next level. And, you know, there's a twist in that game that I'm sure many of you have played through it. If you haven't, go play the original BioShock. BioShock 2 is okay. Like to me, I actually enjoyed BioShock 2 as well. But the first one is just, it was so surreal at the time, because like you didn't really know what was going on. And you know, if you're not familiar with it, you're just kind of in this, I think your plane crashes in the beginning, and somehow you end up in the middle of the ocean and you find this small island with like this door that's like an elevator. And you go down, and then suddenly you discover that there's this whole underwater city that is just in shambles and destroyed. And so part of the game is coming up with the mystery of what's happening there. And then there's characters that you get introduced to that you work with, and they're very odd, and it's just an awesome, awesome series. Obviously, it even birthed like BioShock Infinite, but that original BioShock game, to me, is still the best of that series, and it's still one of my favorite gaming experiences I think I've ever had. That game was just incredible at that time. I mentioned Elder Scrolls. Of course, Elder Scrolls Skyrim, Elder Scrolls 5, is still probably one of the best, if not the best, role-playing game ever. It still has just a huge community, especially on the PC, that continues to make mods for that game. But it launched on the 360. Of course, multi-platform game, but the 360 version is the version I played. And then when I think of that game, that is the version that I think of. And to kind of think of the scope and the scale of that game to be running on the 360 at that time was pretty amazing. I mean, I think we also had Oblivion launched on the 360 as well. And, you know, those games were kind of like night and day almost when you looked at the two of those. I mean, Skyrim just looked so much better. And that just went to show how long that generation had been going on, that you could have a game that looks like Oblivion that still looked pretty well or looks pretty good. But to have that many years later and they know how to use that technology and just make Skyrim just look so much better. I remember actually that was one of the games, that one of the E3s I went to. We had a closed door meeting where Todd Howard got up there and talked to us about Skyrim. And I remember them showing how every object that you could collect, like pots and even your weapons, you could rotate. And I remember that being like a big thing, like, oh my God, look at this sword. You can see how battle worn it is. And I can't wait to go pick up all these things. And what do people go around and pick up? Cheese wheels. Remember, you'd see stories of people like picking up cheese wheels and throwing them in a house. And one guy had like a whole house filled with every cheese wheel possible in the land of Skyrim, which I thought was just hilarious. Yeah, it was just an incredible, incredible game. Speaking of Skyrim and Bethesda, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Fallout 3. Fallout was a series that I knew about and kind of looked at from afar, because I just wasn't into those isometric top-down kind of RPGs, like turn-based RPGs. I mean, I love games like Diablo, like more your ARPGs, but just the turn-based wasn't really into those so much. And I knew Fallout 1 and 2 really had a just a reputation of being very hard. Those games, if you've ever gone back and tried to play them, the beginning is so hard. I mean, you just keep dying over and over. And so, you know, hearing that, I was like, it's not a series for me. Well, when they started kind of the press rounds for Fallout 3, I was immediately just taken aback by the concept of that you were going to give me at that point an Oblivion style RPG, Elder Scrolls Oblivion, in this just giant wasteland, this post-nuclear apocalyptic world. Yes, sign me up. And so every video, I remember just scouring the internet for every preview that I could possibly find for that game. And we even had, actually, my old show, we had Pete Hines, who many of you may know him now. You see him a lot of times. He's kind of like head of PR, basically, for Bethesda. But you see him a lot now on, like, the press conferences and that. And another guy by the name of Emil Pagliarulo, who is one of the writers for the game. Both of them had worked for the website. We used to do our show on avault.com, and so we were able to just basically snag them up because they had jumped over to Bethesda. And we had them on in an interview, and I remember just, like, being so excited to play that game. And when it came out, it pretty much, for me, had lived up to the hype. And, you know, one of those first things you do in that game is you go to a town called Megaton, and you can go in there, and it's basically this giant nuclear bomb that didn't blow up. The whole city kind of built itself around, and you find out there's a plan to blow it up. And so you, as the player, get to decide to either blow up this town or save it. And that's very early on in the game, and that kind of sets the tone for what that game offers. You know, we talk about Mass Effect and how they were letting you make somewhat game-changing decisions, but a lot of it is kind of more just where the story goes or how different characters interact towards you. This was a decision that literally took a whole town out of the game for you, that basically destroyed multiple quest lines, got rid of multiple vendors for you, and I was just kind of blown away with that. Just kind of like I blew away Megaton, which of course was a decision that I had to make. I'm like, you're giving me this power? Yes, I'm going to do it. I'm going to take that power and run with it. And I just such a cool thing for them to add to that game. I thought that was awesome. Another game that did launch on the platform, we talked shooters earlier, was Gears of War. Gears of War completely just reinvented the cover shooter, or invented the third-person cover shooter, because after Gears of War came out, that's all you saw in every game coming out was this third-person cover-based shooter. That was just kind of the thing, like, oh yeah, it's like Gears of War. But that game, for what it did visually on the console, was awesome. You know, this was Epic's big exclusive game to the platform, and you know, you always had Halo, but then suddenly now you had this other competitor. Kind of, people always talked about what the Halo killer was going to be. Not that I think Gears was the Halo killer, but it definitely kind of splintered the community on the Xbox. Like, you were either a Halo person or you were a Gears person, which I thought was kind of awesome, and it just introduced a whole new universe and story to people that there are fans that are still very, very rabid for that series. Now, there was another shooter that even splintered the shooter community even more on the 360, and that, of course, is Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare. I talked about Call of Duty 2. Call of Duty 3 World at War was another one that a lot of people were kind of hit or miss at, but I actually enjoyed Call of Duty 3. I thought that was a lot of fun to play. But 4 obviously took it to the next level. Modern Warfare series just exploded, became, you know, the next best thing since Halo, essentially. I mean, those launches kind of had that Halo launch feel where people were crowding at GameStops or wherever they were buying their games. It was just an awesome, awesome time to be a gamer. And the fact that that game really introduced, like, the upgrade system where you're getting weapons, you're upgrading the weapons, getting attachments, all of that was never in a shooter up to that point. And so that just completely then just, you know, made shooters from that point, if they didn't have a system like that, feel obsolete. I mean, hell, it even made Halo add things like that to their system with the loadouts and that came with Halo Reach. So that game still, and in the story of that game, is awesome. I mean, there's jaw-dropping moments in that story if you play through it. Another game for me too, and one kind of final big game that I want to mention, big series that did launch on that platform, was Borderlands. Borderlands was not a thing up to this point. And of course, it was multi-platform, but it kind of combined what would be a dream game for me. It brought like a Diablo style, that isometric ARPG, to a shooter, and allowed you to play with your friends and go on quests And I mean, the original Borderlands was so much fun. And then obviously Borderlands 2 just took it to that next level with just the accessibility of playing, being able to play online even more so. I remember like Borderlands 2 for me, some of the comedy, the writing in it just didn't strike me. To me, by that point, I just had felt like they were trying too hard. And I think maybe because Borderlands 1 just came out of nowhere and the writing in there, to me, seemed a lot smarter. Like, 2, obviously, there are some funny jokes in there and things, like Easter eggs and things like that are cool. But Borderlands 1 just seemed, because it came out of nowhere, it just seemed much wittier and smarter for me. But obviously, 2 plays way better than 1. When you go back to 1 and kind of see kind of how limited some of that was, you know, that game was, it definitely kind of hits you a little bit. But, you know, that series just obviously has exploded and it's become huge. Of course, led to Borderlands 3, which is out right now. Talking about Xbox Live Arcade and some of the smaller games that are out there, there's a couple different ones that jump out to me. Number one, Super Meat Boy is a game that I absolutely adore. If you're somebody who likes to bang your head against the wall on a platformer, this was the game that kind of started all that on the Xbox. Of course, again, went multi-platform, but it started on the 360. That introduced kind of the idea of dying and immediately respawning, so you could just, you know, you always had that like, let me do one more run kind of feel to it. For me, that just always came off, and it was very, very precise. The controls are just fantastic. It also kind of holds a special place in my heart. I mean, I hate to keep sitting here talking about my old podcast, but we had the members of Team Meat on there shortly after Super Meat Boy came out. I had a great conversation with those guys. Well, then, to my surprise, I didn't know that this was even going to happen, but there was a movie that came out called Indie Game the Movie that they actually documented Team Meat's production of Super Meat Boy, and it kind of goes through as they were doing that. We didn't know that they were recording this at the time. Well, when you watch that movie very early on, it's only like 7 or 8 minutes in, and they're kind of showing like the town that they live in. It's kind of showing a bunch of like scenes from the street. You hear me talking in that. And I had a listener. I had no idea this happened. I had a listener email me one time and say, hey, man, I think you're in this movie. And sure enough, when you hear it, they're playing like a bunch of like other podcast clips. And you hear me say like, you know, we must have been talking about how Super Meat Boy came out of nowhere and people were excited about it. You hear me say like, you know, Super Meat Boy, like Meat Boy is coming or something like that. And it was just awesome. And for a while, the movie was on Netflix. I don't think it's there anymore. But if you check it out, Indie Game the Movie, it's called. And you'll hear my voice in that documentary. It was just really cool. And actually, when you go to the credits, they don't give me a name per se, but it says the A-Vault Podcast. Because I was kind of like sitting there thinking like, do they have the rights to do that? Like, that's our show. But of course, I don't care. I actually had reached out to the creators and they even sent me just a free copy. So I have a digital copy of it. They're like, hey, you know, no worries, man. You know, thanks for allowing us to put you in there. And I was like, all right, that's cool. Like, yeah, I'm glad to be in that. So for a while, I was in a movie on Netflix. You can kind of mark that down. Another game that launched there that was huge was Braid. Braid is an incredible, incredible platform puzzle game that exploded. A nice little bite-sized puzzle game that so many people love. And I loved playing that game. It was great. And then the other big platforming game for me that's, I can't wait for the sequel that I'm still waiting on here, is Spelunky. Spelunky is the game that kind of introduced me to the roguelike genre. I mean, I knew it had been a thing, but I never really found a love for it or enjoyed it. But Spelunky was a game that basically every level you go to, it's always different, always something new. And part of the game is learning not only how to control your character and the abilities and items that you find, like what they do, but learning about the world that the game takes place in. So every enemy, looking for cues amongst each level, because it's different every time and random, it forces you to learn. And when you die, you lose everything and go back to the beginning. And it's just super, super fun game to play, but very, very hard to master. And those who have mastered it, kudos to you, my friends, because I've been trying for years and I can't do it. Let's see. I guess another game also to throw out real quick here for a big one, which nobody mentioned over on Twitter, because I'm kind of scrolling through the Twitter feed now to see, is Red Dead. The Red Dead Redemption series came out on the 360, and nobody mentioned that, which is kind of surprising. And I mean, of course, you had GTA 4 as well, but Red Dead was a whole new IP that Rockstar launched, that obviously super successful with Red Dead Redemption 2 that just came out. But that was, of course, another big one. Let's go here over to Twitter and start scrolling through some of these. Mass Effect came up many, many times. A-Train99WSU mentioned it. Elite Mad Skills mentioned it. You know, it obviously is a just huge series. Let's see who else. FJ Siso 70 mentioned it. Here's a good one. This is from Mikel 78. He mentions Rainbow Six Vegas. I talked about yesterday about my love for Ghost Recon 2. Vegas. That series was incredible as well. It was a lot of fun to kind of do that terrorist hunt in there with friends because you were going around kind of these Las Vegas casinos. But the crazy thing you could do in that game is you could upload your face. You could take the Xbox camera and upload your face and put it into that game and be running around as a soldier shooting your friends. Like, it was crazy. I mean, they had to disable it at some point because people were putting up pictures of their teachers. You know, you think of the time that was. Crazy, right, that people could do that, but it was hugely successful game. Obviously, lots of Halo 3s. Deezer12 mentions Borderlands 2. Dreadnought, he mentions NCAA football. That's, you know, here I am talking Madden. I mean, the NCAA games were huge series over there as well. Slight Steel Soul mentions the Arkham series. Actually, I had someone else mention Arkham. When was that? The Arkham games launcher. There you go, Arkham City Dreadnought. He also mentioned Arkham City. So that was obviously a huge series. And here's another interesting one, Dead Space. This came from Insane E13. He mentions Dead Space, and that probably, I think, was one that I probably even should have mentioned too. I mean, the original Dead Space came out of nowhere from EA. The fact that them kind of launching a new IP that was that successful was awesome. And then, of course, Dead Space 2 is an incredible game. Dead Space 3 was a game that I, you know, played. I never actually finished Dead Space 3. I own that on PC. I should probably go back and play that at some point. But I loved Dead Space 2. It was such an awesome, awesome game. Well, there you go, man. Lots to talk about with the Xbox 360. I mean, I don't think the Xbox One talk will be that long. It's just... The Xbox 360, again, because of its lifetime, and it's just one of the greatest consoles of all time. And, you know, as much as at that point you had the PS3 coming out with games, it just couldn't compete. And again, I think it was just because it was such a hard system to develop games for that even though the games really theoretically should have run better on the PS3, they just didn't. They didn't. You know, 360 was where it was at for a lot of these developers. They were just putting games out there knowing that they would sell well and run well. Obviously, at the same time, you had the Wii doing the complete opposite thing of the 360, but also being very, very successful. Nintendo's take on it just was different, of course. So, well, there you go. That's my talk about the Xbox 360. So, as of this recording, tomorrow, we're getting set for the big Xbox Series X event. But remember, the episode tomorrow that comes out will not be about that. We will be reminiscing about the Xbox One. So, look for my thread over on Twitter at Mark Turk, MarkTurc. And let me know your favorite Xbox One games. And also, you can email me, theenthusedlife@gmail.com. And then, of course, Friday, we'll be breaking down the Series X event and kind of digging through all that. And hopefully, even talking about some of those demos, because a lot of those demos that are part of this Xbox Summer Game Fest, whatever they're calling it, are available now. So if you have an Xbox One, or even I think a lot of those are even available on the PC, go play those now, because you can get in there and get playing some new games. So that's going to do it for me, everybody. Again, as always, thank you for tuning in. And until tomorrow, catch you next time.